Have you found yourself thinking, you know, I really wish that Chris would go to more conferences outside so he could record like those things where he edited from a tent? Well, I thought everybody might have been missing this, and so I recorded outside with my good friend. Just so you know, this is an outside recording. I'd say give it a shot, see if you like it. If not, see you in the next episode. This is the Amp Hour Podcast, released April 16th, 2023. Episode 628. Two dads puzzling things out. Welcome to Amp Hour. I'm Chris Gamble, Contextual Electronics.
And I'm Dave Young of Young Circuit Designs.
And we're on my back porch recording
in person on a delightful day. It's so beautiful.
I probably put a preamble in the recording, but if you didn't hear that for some reason, this is a outdoor recording, so there's going to be noise. It won't be as much of a like at a festival or a conference where we've recorded in the past, where it's like tons of other noise, but there might be some loud cars that go by at some point, but it's so nice that we just had to be outside.
Can't be inside anymore today.
Yeah. So the first thing, welcome back, Dave, by the way.
Hey, thanks. Yeah. Always Dave, good.
Dave's been on a couple times. Dave, I've known since my Keithley days. Actually, no, college
before
days.
Then.
Yeah, college days. Dave and I did our first co-op together.
Yeah.
And, what just blipped? Something just blipped.
I didn't touch anything.
I didn't touch anything either. Maybe it didn't blip.
Yeah.
We'll see. Dave and I have known each other since co-op days, and he's the one who got me into consulting, and this is a bubbly water. That is not beer.
Not yet.
Not yet. I don't drink beer. And Dave came to visit, which is great. We did training on Friday as well.
Yeah.
And we're going to do training again on Monday for Goliath stuff.
Yeah.
And Dave is kind of like trying to do the more firmware stuff like I am as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't wait to have something that's easy to stand up and get things moving quickly.
Yeah.
Because that's what everybody wants, right?
Yeah. That's all
I want something cheap and fast and good.
Yeah.
So we'll keep moving towards that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's the fast part is the hard thing. Is
for
like,
sure.
Like, it's like you still need to have some kind of customization, but you need some kind of customization, but you kind of want like a good starting place. That's kind of what it comes down to.
Yeah. And you don't want to take 6 months to figure out something's not appropriate.
Yeah, right. That is the biggest. Yeah.
That's like the biggest problem.
Halfway down a path.
So if it can be super fast and cheap and good, or good enough rather, then you're in a good spot.
Right. You're trying to prove it out because you're doing consulting. You're trying to prove it out for your clients.
Right.
This is nice. We get ambiance of car horns and...
just focus on the birds.
Outdoors might have been the wrong call. So prototyping and getting people to solutions faster, because then ultimately you make your money when you're actually doing custom hardware, right?
Yeah. There might be other opportunities there, but that's where the real value add. So I've got 15 years of experience and I can bring that to get somebody to a manufacturable product quickly.
Right.
But if you don't know what that manufacturable product is yet,
right,
that's a real problem.
Right. I found, like, we were talking a little bit about, like, people who show up with like a little bit of technical expertise, and they show up with an Arduino,
yeah,
which is fine. Actually, it's a great
way
to
prototype. It's awesome. What a great way to get a first round of funding,
right? But then you turn around, you have to like make that a real thing. That's a lot of what my business was when I was consulting too.
Absolutely. And the thing is it's so different. Like, it's an entire by the time you're in manufacturing, what you build is very different from that original Arduino prototype, and by almost every measure.
Yep. I will bring up, I was on Embedded FM. If you want to hear me talking nonstop about Goliath, you can hear me there. I try not to do that too much here. Of course, Dave being here, we're talking about it because we're doing training on it. But so go listen to that if you haven't. But the first thing I wanted to bring up. All right, here we go. We're going to start.
Oh, yeah, this is good.
Car talk style puzzler this week, including a prize.
prize.
Yeah. So we're going to make this into a puzzle. I'm not very good at this yet. I haven't written it down, which is probably the worst part of it. But if you think you know the answer, write with the subject line puzzler to theamphour@gmail.com, and you will be entered in the drawing for this prize. The prize will be a hard-to-get Amp Hour t-shirt or sweatshirt. You let me know which you'd prefer. If you're in the Southern Hemisphere, you might be going into sweatshirt season. If you're in the Northern Hemisphere, hopefully you're like here in Durham where it's already pretty much summertime.
So nice.
If you're in Rochester, New York, where David's, maybe you're still...
Yeah, hit and miss. Today, I hear, still in sweatshirt is real nice t-shirt weather, but tomorrow, probably not.
Yeah, I heard my folks said in Buffalo that they're it's going to snow next week.
Don't turn those heaters off
That's
yet.
Right, yeah, yeah. Okay, here's the puzzler. I was sitting in my office, in my house, last week, and my TV went off, and which is my main screen, and my Wi-Fi went off. And stop me if I'm giving too much away, Dave.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. And I'm like, okay, well, I must have blown a breaker or something must have happened, right? So I go down to the garage where my breaker box is. I go and look at all the breakers. Nothing. They're all clean. So I start flipping them, powering stuff down, powering back on. Nothing's happening. So I go back upstairs and I notice the hallway light is on. Hallway is lights on, but my office is off. And I'm like, what the heck is going on? And so I go and like kind of just do a quick audit of the rooms throughout the house. My wife's office is off. My daughter's room is off. My bedroom is on. Bathrooms are on. And so I'm just like, what the hell is going on here? And so I'm getting a little freaked out, to be honest. And so I go around and I go down to the garage, which has been having some problems with the garage door opener. And it's just kind of been like some weird behavior. Sometimes it won't actually, you know, you have to press the button a couple times. Sometimes you have to wait. Sometimes it goes up just an inch, whatever. So it's just been kind of weird. And I go there and I'm like, and this is next to where the breaker box is as well. And I go to try the GFCI that's in there. And I press the GFCI test button and it clicks and it won't reset. Mm. And I'm like, what is going on here?
And you hadn't changed anything about that.
Nothing has changed.
About that circuit.
Yeah. Okay. And so the only way I'm able to get it to actually reset is I had to like flip the breaker on off,
right.
And then it would reset.
Right.
And I go back up to my office. Lights still don't work. The router's still off. TV's still off. Everything's dead up there. I'm like, what the hell's going on here? So then I go and I'm like, well, I guess I'll go try other GFCI switches. And I go try the kitchen. You know, kitchen has them, bathroom has them, whatever. Finally, I try the bathroom next to my office, and I flip that one, and I test it, and I reset it, and things come back on.
Ooh.
And I am so incredibly confused at this point. That's on a Monday. I'm like, okay, well, I guess I'll call an electrician if it gets worse. Tuesday night, it gets worse, and it all comes back, and now those breakers that were off, or sorry, the rooms that are off, they are just off. I can't get them to come back. I try all the switches again. GFCI does nothing.
Nothing. So the thing that fixed it before does not fix it now.
There's no consistency.
Oh, see, this is real troubleshooting.
Yeah.
It worked before just yesterday.
Yeah, exactly.
I swear.
So I'm not sure that's enough to... To recap once again. Some of the rooms in my house have power. Some do not. I have no way to suss it out. And so that's all I'm going to leave you with. It's a puzzler for a reason. So what is the possible problem in my house? And for added bonus, how did I figure it out aside from eventually calling the electrician? I actually figured it out, but I didn't figure it out.
You're taking too much credit.
I know.
The guy showed up. It counts
no.
as his win.
No, he totally got it. But I actually did something that freaked me out even more the next day. That made even less sense, and then the electrician showed up, and he figured it out.
Oh, right.
Yeah, you know that part. So, yeah.
So the other thing that I'm just going to add here,
okay, all right.
because
that's what they did on Car Talk too. You always gave like
. So I'm going to add that your house is a delightful house that it was recent build. So you're not dealing with like squirrely 1920s wiring.
Right. No tube, knob and tube like my old 1950s house.
This place was built less than 10 years ago,
right? That's right.
Yeah, so it's all to code and legit and not some like Jim Bob homeowner that decided one day he's going to fix the problem by just jumping this to this. That's not in play.
Right. No pennies in the fuse box.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's what it is. If you'd like to compete... please email theamphour@gmail.com with the subject line puzzler with your answer in the body of the email, and we will pick from among the winners.
Yeah.
So good luck. And I will reveal the story, the remainder of the story next week.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good.
All right. What else do you want to talk about?
So I want to talk about an exciting thing for me in my world is the chip shortage, which has been like...
exciting.
The hashtag. The last time I was on the Amp, I was talking about it, and I was in the depths of despair because all my clients can't make anything.
That's right.
They can make most of their stuff, but as we all know, one part missing is no part out of the end of the service mount line. So I think it's way better. I just had a client this last week, had to pivot and switch. Now, they had a bunch of their stuff on the shelf because of all the problems and the issues we've been having, but it was easier to order a prototype size batch of parts from DigiKey than to pull them off reels and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So we did that, and it was like 90%+ of the BOM.
So what was the other 10%?
We were able to get. The other 10% was actually is really just one part, which is still not available, and it's an instrumentation amp.
Ah, okay.
And
so, like, specialty, let me guess, TI? Analog.
Well, so that's my point, is there are now only two companies
that
make instrumentation amps.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, that make them in earnest.
That's right.
And
yeah, like the spec wars that we're
and
used to.
So where is the motivation for them to turn back on this instrumentation amp line that I need them to turn back on?
Mm.
If they're competing, their one competing company doesn't make something
similar. That's right. Yeah, it's like a not prisoner's dilemma, but it's like they're edging forward. Like, you're gonna do it? I'm gonna do it.
Yeah,
I'm gonna do
so
it.
So here we are,
and they all can make money, like bigger money, and probably have more clients yelling at them, like the Apples of the world, being like, "No, you will make our parts.
You will
first.
Make our parts."
Yeah.
So where's the incentive? Where's, you know, it's the problem with a duopoly.
Yeah.
Is you get weird incentive structures going, and it's a problem. So that's the issue, and I am lamenting the mergers.
Oh, yeah. It's
the last.
I don't know
years.
Any. What is the any positive has come out of that?
I mean, in theory, it's economies of scale, but then we got burned by economies of scale during COVID with the chip shortage. Like, one fab goes down and half your parts
are
not available.
I mean, but they're not using. If they were making their own fab, if they had their
that's
own
true.
Fabs,
it's different fabs.
TI has their own fab, but if they're all if they're all fabless, then there's no scale there.
But as you get larger and larger companies, you find economies of scale because one order looks like a piece of a giant order.
Oh, I see.
But
yeah, they have more sway with
everything
that.
Looks all of the product lines of these two companies look the same.
Yeah.
And so one problem comes along and it impacts everything the same, as opposed to if you have all the distributed companies doing different things, they take different. Like Linear, for the longest time, had their own fabs.
Yeah.
And even in the shortage that happened in 2008, you were able to get Linear parts way sooner. Like TI was talking 99 weeks and Linear's talking 30. So
I don't remember the 2008.
Yeah, I was talking with Jeff Ivanko about this. He was like, we are in a totally different scenario than TI because we have our own stuff and we have a bunch more and we're set up to be more nimble. And Linear was just like a different company to start with. And that was one of the benefits. So now that Linear is part of Analog, it's like,
it's
all the same. And it's just, there's two ways to do it. And it's the TI way and the Analog way. And they're not that different.
Yeah. That sucks.
The approach isn't that different. So,
right. And there's no like fabless that are popping out of the woodwork either for that stuff.
No. What was that company that tried to be fabless? Did they succeed?
No.
Was it Toradex or I can't
Triad.
Remember.
Triad. No, not Triad. Triad is a semiconductor company. I know you're talking about.
Yeah.
We had them on the show.
We had them on.
They failed. No, they're gone.
They didn't make it.
They didn't
get bought out. It was not.
They got
successful.
Like acqui-hired, I think.
Okay. So that's not bad, but still, it's just the same thing as Linear being bought by Analog. So.
Sorry, I'm a little distracted here. I'm also, you know, because we're recording at home in person, I'm also watching the monitor, and my daughter is stirring.
Not the audio monitor.
Not the audio monitor. The baby monitor. Yeah.
Right, so the other problem that I have, the shortest problem that I still have, and this is for my education company, Blue Stamp Engineering, where we are teaching kids how to build cool stuff.
Yeah.
We can't get a Raspberry Pi.
No.
So the point of Raspberry Pi is to teach kids stuff, and we can't get pies.
No.
And so I don't know what I'm going to do.
It's getting a little better. I did get some CM4s.
Did you?
Yeah.
Okay. I can't use the CM4s.
I know. But you need the baseboard then. It's not meant for, I mean, that's actually meant to try and offload some of the people that are using Raspberry Pis.
Hey, so that's a step in the right direction. Like recognizing how people are using your product, and we'll leave this for the kids, and we'll make
and
something
scale,
special for you.
And scale that other stuff.
And that you want the CM4 anyways.
Right.
Because you don't want the
full
size.
That's right.
You want
the
slot.
I want the IOs and a tiny pitch.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I can't get the Raspberry Pis. If anybody out there knows how I can get Raspberry Pis, please let me know. I would be very interested. Because right now, our best approach is to pay the scalpers.
Yeah, that's
And I also don't like doing that because I'm contributing to the bad behavior of scalping.
Yeah.
So, I don't know what I'm going to do, so please. Somebody
there is a tracker that doesn't, and people give me that as the, you know, there's like a Raspberry Pi tracker that allows you to see who has it in stock, whatever.
But they're all zeros.
Well, they're all zeros, but also it doesn't really help. I don't need a tracker. I need a alert service, really.
Right. Like we have some.
I need a purchasing agent is what I really need. You know, yeah. I need someone who's like, oh yeah, I'll just buy them when they come up, you know?
Yeah. Well, so I've got our program manager checking every day.
Yeah.
For stock.
Do you have orders in anywhere?
No.
Yeah. That's the other thing too, is like you need like a, who's the most statistically likely? And I'll go wait in line. As long as I know that line might get filled.
Yeah. But like we talked about last time with the chip shortage, you could have an order in with Mouser, and then they have some on the shelf. You see it just because you're checking and you're desperate because of the chip shortage. You buy them. They ship the ones that you put an order in 2 seconds ago in, and your back order is still sitting there waiting.
Oh. Yeah.
So, and I can appreciate the position they're in. Like, they were in the mess just like we were. Mm-hmm. So they were probably just trying to do their best. But just putting a back order in is not the same thing as... having an order.
Yeah, I think about it more as a backstop. I mean, my
big
order...
Yeah, right, it doesn't cost you anything. Unless
my big order came in on Christmas Eve.
It
fulfilled on Christmas Eve.
Yeah.
Or the day after Christmas. It was definitely around Christmas. I was very surprised by that. So, yeah.
So anyways, I'm not sure what I'm going to do. And the other thing is I do pay a penalty if I put a back order in and then I forget about it and it ships in July after the program's like almost done. That's a problem for me.
Yeah.
Like,
that's
here's
just...
your $4,000 bill and all your Raspberry Pis.
Yeah.
And
that sucks.
Yeah. Hopefully we won't need that many Raspberry Pis, but we'll need
hopefully you do. You have so many students.
I have so many students that are so interested in electronics.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. So that.
Yeah, it does feel like this. I mean, like, I haven't been building a ton of stuff, but it does feel like it's generally a lot easier to get stuff. And I feel like it does. One of the things that was problematic was like this ping pong effect where, like, so you and I are trying to buy the same kind of chip.
Yes.
Right. You would say instrumentation amps again. I see that I have the TI part in my thing. I decide to go and design the analog part.
Right.
I take away from you.
Take away from
you.
Me,
take away from me. And it's just like, ping pongs around the ecosystem like that. I mean, boards aren't that hard to respin. There's obviously cost to hire people like you.
Yeah, there's the time and money cost. And really, it's the risk.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It's the
risk. Yeah,
because
you miss something or the pinout's different or whatever it is.
And it doesn't work till I see it work. Uh-huh. I tell that to everybody. So, like, so we can go to production. It doesn't work till I see it work.
Yeah.
So it's just a lot of risk. But hopefully it's on the end, and this is the last time we have to talk about not being able to get parts and having to pivot. But I do want to talk about the CM4. Have you designed in the CM4, or are you still working on it?
Yeah, it's still going. But yeah.
Is the CM4, I haven't looked at the pinout yet, is the CM4 have high-speed layout requirements for that slot?
Define high-speed.
Like, do you need... Can you design... If you're not using any impedance-controlled buses... Mm-hmm. In order to make that work, so if I had like a simple Raspberry Pi design where I just need to communicate, I just need GPIO, or I just need like an I2C bus or a SPI bus or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Can I use like a low grade 2 or 4 layer PCB?
You can do
in order to plug in and it'll work.
You can do that for controlled impedance too, as long as you follow the rules.
Yeah, I know. But then if you're going to do a controlled impedance and you need to know stack up and you can't go to like some random place.
You do the cheapo, big name Chinese houses.
Right,
but
I'm not saying there's not solutions. My question is, do I have to use any of those techniques? If I were a beginner.
Got it. So like if one of your, how about like framing it like this? If one of your students.
Yes, this is exactly
what
I'm
asking. Or an intern, maybe because maybe a high school student is there, but an intern might be.
Sure.
Is an intern able to do this? I think so.
So
I
there's,
think
there's
big
nothing
thing,
crazy about your layout.
No, nothing crazy about the layout. The big thing is it's a 0.05, or it's a 50 mil pitch connector. And those are hard to get. Those are unobtainium still, too. So
is that right?
They're Hirose connectors. They're 100 pin. You need two of them. They're expensive.
You need two.
They're like two rails.
Oh, right, because they did it's like the daughter board module
It's
now.
Like a daughter board.
It's not
the
RAM slot anymore. It's
That's
the daughter
board. Yeah,
I forgot about that.
Yeah. And so, like, if alignment's off...
Oh, how are you doing alignment? Are you hand-building these or something else?
I am hand-building prototypes, and then production, you know, someone else will be building them.
Yeah.
So that'll be fine.
You going to be able to do the hand-populated alignment?
I have stopped even using paste for them. My paste... I got myself into trouble with my paste. I was using 5-year-old paste. Don't do that. That's a bad idea.
Yeah, they have an expiration date on them.
They have
for a
very
reason.
Firm one. I should have thrown it out 3 years ago, though.
Yeah.
And it's just like I wasted a lot of my own time.
Yeah, because it's just not as nice to work with. I don't even wait until it's halfway
expired. You
should
buy it. Yeah, you should buy it every... If you're not refreshing every year, you should just throw it out.
I don't even make it that long. Yeah. I feel like every time I make a board, I'm going to be considering buying Flux.
Yeah.
Or buying paste.
Buying paste. That's not a bad idea.
Yeah. Now, that said, I have an expiration date on some of my leaded solder with rosin core that's got to be 15 years ago.
Oh, totally.
Yeah. And I still use that, and it flows great.
Yeah. Yes. Anyways, so I got myself in a little trouble with paste. So what I started doing is I just hand soldered it all. I like literally these 50 mil pitch like connectors.
Now, what technique did you use?
Just a drag solder. Yeah. So okay. Like pin the corners.
So you stake the
corners,
two down.
Pin the corners and then flow it. And like honestly, if you have good magnification, it's fine. I mean, not fine. It's you get used to it. You get better at it. And
so how many
what it really came down to is I was reworking a bunch of them, and then I was like, this is just so much easier to do by hand.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that was my question. How many did you screw up?
Oh, so many.
So many. You know what I like to do with those things is I put the connectors in the CM4, and then I solder it. I tack on the four pins.
You can't get at it. It covers.
Oh, you can't get
covers,
at it at all.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
And that's 50 mil pitch. Well,
it's
50
tough.
50 mil is not all, surface mount, though.
It's teeny tiny.
Yeah. 50 mil?
Is it 50 mil?
50 mil is not teeny tiny. Because 100 mil pitch pins is
sorry. Not 50 mil then.
A dip.
Sorry. It might be 0.5 millimeter. What is the Hirose part?
0.5 millimeters would be tough. That sounds about right.
100.
Because a 0.5 millimeter would be like a typical QFN.
R5 CM4. I'm doing a live search, of course, if people.
Yeah. At least the internet's good. It won't be slow. Well, maybe I was wrong.
which one is it? It's the DF40 HC 100DS.
You guys are watching him check right now to make sure there's stock.
Yeah.
Or not.
Yeah.
If he finds some stock, he may have to step away for a minute and get some.
Yeah, right. No, I'm all stocked up. I'm all stocked up on that stuff. Oh, this is just, man, this Raspberry Pi article is not. It's not 50 mil. You're right. That'd be
big.
That is wrong. What is the pitch? 0.4 millimeters.
0.4.
Oops. Yeah, got that.
Yeah.
This one might be wrong. It might be 0.5 millimeters.
Yeah, but
it's
still.
It's tiny. It's tiny.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think this is. It might be the DF50C.
But you figured it out. You got there.
I got there. And
if
I would say
if I
it's
you
possible.
To make one right now, could you do it?
Yes, I could do it.
Okay.
But I have good magnification. I ended up getting a long throw magnifier off of AliExpress.
Okay.
So it's got like this long, it's like a telescopic lens basically.
Yeah.
And then like a 30 megapixel sensor. The whole setup was like $200, but I mounted up above like probably like a, you know, half a meter off my bench top.
So you can get it off
there.
So
you get a ton of...
It doesn't have to be right on top
right.
of it.
People have seen it before. They're like, well, you don't have stereoscopic then, which is true.
Right.
Actually, it's Florin from Voltlog. He has a video about this setup. That I stole all this stuff from
his. Yeah.
So he bought it as a thing that he put onto his microscopic or his stereoscopic microscope. And then he added this as like the third inlet to that thing, and then he uses that.
Yes.
I didn't want to do that, but it comes with this long throw telescopic lens, and I just use that.
Okay.
And as long as you have like I mount it to a shelf, so my bench, if I'm messing with my bench, it doesn't vibrate.
Right.
And then I have an HDMI like a cheapo HDMI monitor right there. So it's basically like it's like a heads up. I'm like looking up at the screen.
So what is that, like 7-inch HDMI monitor or something like that?
Yeah. Yeah, like 7-inch, like
yeah.
100
something
you'd
use for like a Raspberry Pi project.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. So super simple.
Okay.
Neighbors.
Chris is enjoying the ambiance of the outdoors.
You know, the birds are great. The birds are great.
Yeah.
The trucks and
just
the motorcycles.
On the birds.
Okay, just birds.
Just focus on the birds.
Chirp, chirp. Yeah. You think that's something your students would do or what?
What, lay out a board?
Yeah.
Yeah. So at Blue Stamp, we lay out boards.
Yeah,
it's a subset of the population because we have to plan it. So at Blue Stamp, we have what's called a student-defined project.
Yeah.
And that's literally they get to do what they want as long as it's safe and reasonable.
Do
and
it
okay.
alone.
And many students come in and be like, I want to lay out a board. And I'm like, yeah, you do. Here we go. This is why we do this stuff.
Yeah.
And so we figure out a way so they can lay out a board. And we you know, we get the super swift service from Oshpark, or we figure out a way to make it so that they can get it on time and still assemble it and build it. But they wouldn't, you know, impedance controlled board, if that's what it took to get a CM4 in there, it's not going to go.
Yeah,
but it sounds like if I needed to just do power, ground, and a bunch of IOs or whatever.
I wouldn't say that, though. You really do want the impedance control part, because otherwise you don't have a display output, right? So unless they're
But if I wanted to do like an IoT device based on the Pi.
Don't do that.
Yeah. Well, so that's the other thing is like, why are you using a Pi? Probably for like a video camera interface. Video,
exactly.
And then you're into what is that? Like the MIPI standard? Like that's a pain in the ass.
DSI outputs.
DSI, yeah, that's a pain. I've laid those out. It's a pain in the. It'd take me the entire blue stamp just to teach them how to lay out.
Yeah, and
that
I think
bus.
HDMI then too. But like, it's doable. But it's not. Yeah, it's doable.
It's just
probably not worth it for the timeline you have.
Probably not worth it. Yeah. Still, it's good to know that if there is something that comes up.
And it's not like they're not like more accessible. The CM4 is not more accessible. It's just that I had an order in it for a long time.
Right.
So that's the main thing.
Right. Right. Yeah, so it probably wouldn't work out, but it's good to know. I mean, the other thing is a backup plan if we can't get the real boards, get the CM4s and a breakout board.
Mm. Yeah, you could do that. I would say, like, you know, like there's new RockPi type things. Like,
so the problem is we try and use projects that have already been documented.
Yeah, I get it.
And so
some of that stuff
port
though, is
it
made,
over.
It's not porting, though. It's like... The OS level is the same.
It's the same, sure. So. But like the pinouts may change, or a lot of stuff can change, and you could easily spend, you know, the point of Blue Stamp is to be accessible enough so that anybody can do it, but we can quickly assess where a student is and dial in a custom program so that they can be challenged at their level.
Yeah.
And so it's very challenging at a experienced student level to engage in that kind of transition, but
yeah,
it's true. It's not fun. Yeah. Nobody's going to stay in engineering because of changing from a Raspberry Pi to a Pine or whatever.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting problem, but so far we just pay the scalpers.
Yeah, it sucks. Right? Yeah, it sucks, but that's probably the right call.
If I can pay the scalpers and I can give the student the level of experience I'm trying to give them, then that's going to be the best or the least worst option.
Right. Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah, and it is interesting when you have like reference hardware like that, like, you know, even in a someone else's Hackster.io project or something like that, right? It's still that's the thing that you're following. And so
the other thing is they already have, you can post comments on their site and sometimes they respond. And there's all kinds of stuff that comes along with it that makes it work so much better. And it teaches the student, you know, you're not alone.
Yeah.
It's okay if you don't understand how something is going to come together.
Right.
You got to have a little faith
and
just find the next step.
Yeah.
Right? It's not about the last step, it's about the next step.
Yeah.
So that's all the stuff we're trying to teach, and so it fits. Mm. So we'll just pay the scalper, pay the man.
It sucks.
Ugh. Bugs me every time.
Yeah. Hey. Well, I don't think we're gonna call the shortage over yet.
No, certainly not. It's just
getting
not
a little easier.
Like the hair on fire feeling any longer. It's a problem.
Yeah.
That's all it is. It's not an emergency. It's not a crisis. It's just a problem.
Yeah.
You can manage it. You can manage it now. Yeah. The other thing I wanted to talk about was...
Good. Because I don't have anything.
Yeah, it's okay. I got my notebook here.
Yeah.
So Amazon Sidewalk being opened up.
Oh, yeah. I want to talk to you about this because I don't think Dave Jones wants to talk about this.
Oh, okay. Here we go.
Yeah.
I'm Sidewalk.
So you're excited about this.
Yeah. So, and this comes up when we were talking about Goliath, is what are my opportunities to get data at a low cost? So there are many opportunities to get data out at high cost. Right, like I can just throw a particle device in somewhere, and if you can pay the monthly fee, you've got an amazing solution right there. But if I don't have a monthly fee, or if I don't have a product or I don't have a project or something that it can rationalize, it's not so great.
Right.
So what if I want something that's a little bit different, and this would be another viable option? And the fact that they have already paid all, they being the consumer, has already paid all the money to create the network and maintain the network.
Well, it's not just the consumer, too.
Yeah, right.
Maybe you should explain what it is.
So Amazon Sidewalk is where they have a way they connect their devices. And then if you... And it connects to the internet by way of a router.
Right. So like certain Amazon Ring products.
Yes.
I think some of the Amazon router, or some of the like Wi-Fi Eero.
Right.
Things like that.
Right. And it's a mesh network, right? It's just point to point.
It's LoRa.
Oh, it's Laura. Okay.
Yeah. So basically, they snuck Laura radios into just about everything they've been making. And then they're like, you know what? We're going to turn this on and share your... So, like, you have to opt in now.
Yeah, that's right. They had that big thing.
Yeah.
Where it they is got opt in trouble.
Yep, yep. Where but people... when you... People do opt in.
People
and,
do.
And even... You just think about the ubiquity of these products. It's not all Amazon products either. It's some products. And... But you think about the range of Laura. So, like, Andreas, who's been on the show before, he did testing on line of sight Laura chirp type stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's like 36 kilometers or something. I mean, it was a mountain, but like just the amount of range you get versus other stuff is significant. And so now you have all these consumer products throughout neighborhoods where you're trying to maybe track stuff. You're just basically trying to pass stuff back through the network to get it back to some server.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think actually it's kind of like a, it's an analog to the LoRaWAN-based things network.
What was that? Was that Sigfox or was that something else?
That was LoRa as well.
Okay.
So that's based on LoRaWAN. So LoRaWAN is basically, you have LoRa radios, which are that in the U.S. it's 915, in Europe it's 868 megahertz, in Australia it's 904, I think.
I'm really impressed you know these numbers.
Yeah, thanks.
Or you were able to make them up confidently.
Yeah, exactly. You don't really know. So there are concentrators, basically. And so a concentrator is basically a thing, a multi-channel, because there's different channels within, you know, 915 is like the baseband, but then there's different channels where there's these little slices of frequency. And so there's different channels you can receive on. And so like a multi-channel concentrator would be listening for LoRa signals on all these different channels. And then it would basically hand that message along to over an internet connection to the server. I think the baby's going off.
So you got a big network
that
you can tap into.
That's right. And so, yeah, the basic idea is the things network is a community kind of organized one. And if you have a server in your region and you have a device that is validated to be on the things network, then the packet's allowed to go through. It'll be handled along the server, and eventually it'll show up at its destination and be good to go.
Yeah.
Now, if we think about it, instead of a community contributed concentrator, it's just an Amazon device.
Yeah,
they're doing the same thing.
They're opening it up, and that's what makes so much available. And I was thinking initially, like stuff around my neighborhood I could do, or stuff in my community I can do, and pass things around.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, I don't think you have to pay for it. You have to be on AWS.
You have to be on AWS.
So if you're paying AWS, IoT, whatever thing,
yeah.
Then so it sounds like it's a sales technique for Amazon.
It's a loss leader. Yeah, I think
yeah.
so. Yeah.
And so it makes it so that the product is now all of a sudden viable where before it was not, because the per user cost is zero.
Who's the user in that sentence?
The user being the person that has it at their house. Whoever's going to put
this
device.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. This is basically like if the Things Network concentrator was thrown in for free, all you had to do was click a button.
Yeah.
That's basically this.
Right.
Yeah.
But that's a huge cost.
That's a huge cost.
For every other competitor in the space.
Oh, yeah. Right, exactly.
So
yeah.
this opens up a different business model that otherwise wouldn't be available.
Another analog here is the Helium network, right? So Helium basically did the same thing where they tried to get people to install hardware,
mm-hmm.
and then they incentivized them with a now absolutely worthless coin.
Is it absolutely worthless?
Because they switched to from HNT, which is a Helium network token,
uh-huh.
whatever it was. And that was their currency, their cryptocurrency. And then they switched to Solana recently.
Okay.
Yeah.
So does that mean that all your Helium tokens are now worthless?
I think they probably got changed over to Solana.
So there was an exchange rate, and it was kind of like a buyout situation?
I think so. I think they didn't want to administer the token anymore.
Yeah, who would?
That's how they incentivize people to buy this hardware and then distribute around.
And that makes sense. You put the right incentives in place, and you can do cool things like this.
That's right. Right. And then you drop the cost of... But that was always my question with the Helium stuff is like, it's actually a great model to get consumers to pay for hardware to install.
Yeah.
How do you get... I never heard of them incentivizing the developers to put stuff onto that Helium network to utilize all these different concentrators, basically.
Yeah. Well, I would assume that the incentive is the same one that Amazon now has, and so they're getting undercut. But if I can put I could put a device on Helium,
mm-hmm.
and I could transfer... Oh, but you can't transfer data over it for free. Somebody's got to pay for that in Helium coin.
That's right. Exactly. Yeah. So that's it's amortizing that cost. Now Amazon is basically saying, well, it's just
data.
We'll
just give it to you for free.
Yeah, exactly. We're going to make it up on the back end.
Right.
When someone, they're going to get lock in with whoever's using this.
Yep.
Someone's going to deploy a fleet.
Yep.
And then they'll make it up at some point in the future.
Which is locked on AWS.
Which is what people can do when they have huge networks. And it's honestly, it's pretty brilliant, right?
Yeah. Because I mean, like, it's not, it's way cheaper for them to do this than to do other methods of acquiring customers. So to pass that data, they already have the hardware deployed.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, it'll be interesting to see what's built on top of this, because there's a lot of lock-in, but also Amazon's huge, and it's not like people are like, it's not a terrible choice, right?
It's not.
It's not like, you know, Bobby's fly-by-night IoT shop.
Sure,
it's like,
sure.
It's AWS.
And it'll be around for a long time. You can be pretty confident they're not going to run out of money.
Well, I don't know if I would say around for a long time. I mean,
well, it's not going to be because
Google IoT Core is
not going to be because Amazon's not running out of money.
Well,
is what I'm saying.
Yeah, you never know. You never know.
Never know.
You never know.
You're right.
You never say never.
But it's a safe bet.
I think it's a safer bet. Yeah. So, and it's a low cost. Not low cost. That's the wrong way to say it. It is a what do I want to say here? It's
the marginal cost for them to do it is
the
cheap.
Marginal cost. Yeah, that's right. They basically the main cost is the development of the network, and
right.
then the,
which they had to do
the chip cost that they threw into the, you know, like it's not cheap to throw a radio in a already low margin product,
right?
But they were already subsidizing hardware anyways, so
yeah.
like this is them probably making that back,
right?
You know,
right.
On a longer time scale.
The other thing is they can use that for their products too.
That's right.
So yeah, every product that I could think of, I'm sure is on a drawing board at Amazon right now.
Oh, yeah. You're right, right,
right. So they're putting it in there, being like, all right, it's a marginal cost. Once again, it's that marginal cost that they're worried about.
Yep.
It's like, what does that chip cost me?
Yep.
What does a LoRa chip cost today? If I want to put one
no idea.
In a high-volume
like
product.
Semtech SX1276, something like that. Let me look it up.
Yeah. But. I'm just curious what it would cost to put one in high-volume, like 1 to 100,000 piece quantity. What are you going to pay to add that wireless network to your product?
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. Anyways, I'm excited. There's a bunch of stuff I want to do personally with this, and then there's just to tinker around with stuff in my area, because I know everybody has rings around me, and then there's a bunch of stuff that I could see as a potential product.
It would be interesting to like war drive with this sort of thing, just to be like, I'm just going to take something that's going to blip every second,
and
drive through the neighborhood, and I'm going to see where do I get coverage, where do I not. I'm sure they have maps, too.
They have a map. It's like
maps,
you go on, and you can see what the map is, and like my neighborhood's covered in it. Mm. So, and a lot of places are covered in it.
Yeah.
And the other thing you realize is every place that I would, if I'm trying to make a legitimate business model product, 95% of my customers that would be wanting something that's connected is probably already got an Amazon Ring product, if not in their house, in their neighborhood.
Oh, yeah, you're saying like the lookalike audience.
Yeah.
Right.
Like if you're looking at your typical customer, they're going to be covered by Amazon Sidewalk.
Right. I think that's probably right. And I don't think Amazon's the last to do this. I'm sure Apple's working on something similar. They already have like the Find My network, right? And that's on phones.
Yeah, right.
That's Bluetooth based, kind of a similar stuff. I'm not sure if other developers can get onto that, but
I'm sure the answer is no.
Well, they have like the MFI service or whatever it is where
are you familiar with what it takes to do MFI?
No.
It's a pain in the neck.
Yeah. Okay.
I looked at it years ago, like 6 or 7 years ago.
Okay.
And like you have to be brought in, you have to go through all this legal stuff.
You need a
stuff.
Chip on your stuff, right?
You need the chip. But even to get the data sheet, you have to be in the system.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And there's like all the stuff you have to do legally and business wise and competitive wise. Like they don't make it easy to just be like, give me that MFI chip so I can put it on my board. Yeah. The answer is no.
Yeah. right. So you have to be,
and then
another,
you're held
another
and to
big
their point,
co, right.
They want to make sure you're high holding their standards
because
you could blow up their customer experience and that's what they sell on.
Yeah.
So, I understand the point, but I am not super optimistic that they would let you on there real easy.
Yeah. I'm wondering if we need to amp up this amp hour experience by this auditory quest that we were on by bringing a baby into it.
Yeah, sure. Let's get the cacophony going.
I think so. Let's just call this 40 minutes of a normal show, and we're about to go.
We'll see what happens.
We're about to go to bonkers mode.
We'll see what happens. I got a couple kids myself.
This
so
is
it's not going to surprise me.
Dad life.
Dad life.
Hashtag dad life.
Yeah, that's
I'll be right.
Right
back.
I'm gonna while you're gone. I'm gonna talk about the.
Oh, you are.
Yeah, I'm gonna talk
don't say
about
anything weird.
The I'll say lots of weird stuff.
Okay.
about the home appliance stuff.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So I've got a problem. My mom has a stove in her condo that is, you know, it's 8, 9 years old, maybe 10 years old. She's got a stove in her condo that she put in, and the front panel failed. So that, you know, all the lights, all the buttons are gone. You can't see anything. And so my brother takes it apart. He looks at it, and he's, I don't know, this is definitely an electronics problem. So he gave it to me to check out. And I looked. I was like, okay, let's look. Let's see if we can get something online. My brother Hunter, he looked for me. And actually, he looked. He took the initiative and looked himself. And he said it, they have refurbished units because they obviously don't make them anymore. The parts are gone from the factory. They have refurbished units, but they're $450. So now we got to decide, like, okay, we have a stove that would probably take between $1,000 and $2,000 to replace and a real pain in the neck to get up to a condo, or a refurbished board on a 10-year-old stove, which may have another thing fail in who knows when. So neither of those options are particularly good. So he sent the board out to me to look at myself, and I checked it out, and I found the problem was they have an LDO. They've got a low dropout regulator that's generating the 5 volts for the whole board. And next to the LDO, there are these two 1206 resistors in parallel on the input line. So you've got a couple resistors coming in from the power source, which I'm not sure what it is yet. And it goes through these resistors into the LDO, which then generates the 5 volts. So we have the 5 volts that are supposed to come out, and this is a technique that I've seen in a bunch of different designs where instead of doing a switcher, you're cost sensitive or you're space sensitive. Well, not really space sensitive, but if you're cost sensitive, you can put a cheap LDO in, and then if it's too much power for the LDO to consume, you can add a couple of resistors in line with that LDO where you know that a lot of the power, the bulk of the power is going to get chewed up by the resistors, and then you still leave the LDO there to regulate the voltage outside of that. So I look, and the two resistors on the way in have obviously charred and they're smoked. Not totally smoked. It looks like they have slowly been baked. So it's got, instead of like a flame looking char, it's got a it's got almost like a tan or a dark hue to the PCB around the resistors, and then the solder looks all kind of funny and the resistors don't look great. And so sure enough, I see the baked components and I check the resistance, and it's very clear that the resistance is open. It's the resistors are open, totally fried, not working at all. So my immediate response is I'm just going to replace these 1206s and we'll be back in business. But I thought if it failed once, it's going to fail again, and I don't want this to be the thing that fails the second time. So instead of using two 1206s, I used four 1206s, different resistor values, so it's still the same resistance, just a lot more surface area for the heat to be dissipated. If you're hearing that crinkle, that would be Chris getting some goldfish for his daughter.
Yep. And
they look so tasty.
I'm back.
Anyway, so I have the board fixed. My brother's going to put it in this weekend, and hopefully we'll find out, you know, what are we working with? Is this something that is going to fix it or not? I'm pretty sure it's going to fix it. At least I checked the 5-volt regulator, and the 5-volt regulator now runs, where before it didn't.
I actually didn't get the details here.
Yeah, well, long story
short.
I'll
go listen later.
Is the designers blew it, and they put too much heat through resistors, and over 10 years it failed.
Yep.
So, I mean, there could have been another short down the line and the resistors acted like a fuse, but it didn't look like that. It looked more like baked parts. Mm. So I was really frustrated that I have this stove, which hundreds of pounds, like a lot of weight,
mm-hmm.
a big hassle, a big amount of money that failed because of a rookie mistake, right?
It feels like most people would just throw out the stove.
Most people would throw out the stove. And so that's now crazy. You've got all this stuff in a landfill or best case scenario recycling place, and then a whole new several hundred pounds of stuff that I have to buy of virgin material.
Right.
So like the whole thing feels so icky.
Why do you hate stimulating the economy?
What's wrong with just consuming more? So I'm really frustrated this whole scenario, and it all comes down to a rookie mistake that a 5-minute design review would have been like, you can't do that.
Yeah.
Like, you can, but you're going to mess up a bunch of stuff and it's not going to last. And there's, of course, the cynical side of things. Are they doing this on purpose so they make you buy a stove in 10 years?
Yeah,
like, the
right.
planned obsolescence, like, ha, 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 ha. Mm-hmm. Not only am I saving a nickel, I'm also making $2,000.
That's right. That's right. I'm building a job for myself.
Yeah, right. And that whole thing just feels so smarmy to me.
You really got worked up when we were upstairs, huh?
And yeah, I do. Well, you leave me alone. What's going to happen?
Don't leave this man alone with a microphone. Just hi to Dave.
Hi.
That's my daughter. She's now noshing on goldfish crackers. And
who doesn't like a goldfish cracker?
I mean,
they're delicious.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I'm not sure how to solve this problem, but it feels like there is value to be had, mm-hmm. where the consumer wants to buy one stove in their life, maybe two.
I don't know. Well, what is their I don't know. I see like new smart devices and like all of the stuff that's in there. Like, oh, we have an air fryer now.
Okay. Yeah.
Buy one separately, I guess. I don't know.
I don't know. The smart devices. Do you know anybody that wants their phone or their stove to be connected
to
Wi-Fi?
And I see the things that like people like go gaga over that June oven. You seen those things?
I have not.
It's like a toaster oven basically, and it's got like a down camera, and then it's got like a QR code scanner. And so the business model is like you order these.
Don't tell me you buy your food from them.
You do.
Stop it.
It still works. It's not like it like locks you out from using it as a toaster oven, but if you wanted to have like these pre-made profiles, and so it just cooks it and you don't have to think about
it. So you just know.
You just know.
And I could see that because so many pizza joints that you would like go and pay money for mm-hmm. aren't any different, right?
They exactly.
In one
just,
thing.
You're just paying a 16-year-old kid to do the same thing.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that's your monitor.
So anyways, I'm sitting
Dave,
here thinking
how are you I mean, let's go on the childhood track. How are you teaching your kids electronics?
So right now, it is, they get to come out to my lab and they get to ask me questions and
that's nice.
We get to,
your kids are
we get to do stuff.
Below 10.
Yeah. Right. So yep. they're elementary school age.
Yep.
I'm dreaming of the day when I can have them build boards for me, and I think it's coming. And I think at least my older son is interested. I don't know if my younger one will be or not. It's too early to tell.
No, sorry.
But they are both very much interested in the lab, which is a great sign.
That's good.
They might be interested because I'm interested, and it's fun to do with Daddy, and they always know they can
get
positive attention.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
What a great way to...
Dave, you know, he's trying to get his kids into electronics, it seems. And
yeah.
I think that is the dream, but you know, also you don't want to force them. You know?
Yeah, well, I'm going to pay him.
Well, that's one way to do it.
Right? Yeah. Like, giving him a whole bunch of money to come and build boards.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, of course.
Right? And they can make more money building boards for me than they can working at McDonald's. So
sure.
And it's going to be way better. They can sit there and watch Netflix while they're doing it and, like, assembling boards. Oh, absolutely. You've never watched Netflix while building boards?
I have done it for my personal boards. I'm just saying I'm not going to let a kid do it because when I was a kid, I was so locked into the screen, I'm going to, like, burn my finger off.
Yeah,
I guess you learn pretty
fast
there, too.
That's true. I mean, they wouldn't watch some show they've already seen 100 times.
Do they only get paid for working boards?
No. I see what you're saying there. That could be tricky. But yeah, so I involved them. When I went to SuperCon, you know, they had the badge.
Yeah.
They loved the badge. And
I do think
it.
Like Blinky. Like I thought about like building something for her. Like.
But they loved it way more because it was all exposed.
Yeah, of course.
So instead of being in that plastic case like the little video game things are, whatever.
Which badge did you get? You got the
I got the
Game Boy?
So both of them. So the little Game Boy one that was on the Adafruit board, and then the big one that had the big screen with the Flappy Bird and the...
Right.
Yeah. So the Flappy Bird game they loved.
That was 2019. That was made by Sprite.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. Yes.
It had like an FPGA on it.
Yeah, it was like a legit piece of machinery.
I sold mine for $350.
Stop it.
Yeah, I gave it to Girls Who Code.
Oh, well, that's awesome.
That's the way to do it. Go to SuperCon, sell your badge, donate the money.
Donate the money. Yeah. That is the way to do it.
Yeah.
$350?
People love those badges. I mean, that one was particularly good. I mean, the last one was too. Like the
that
Voya
one was particularly good. Like you could do so much with that. Well, anyways.
Yeah, it's basically a dev platform. Yeah.
That's what I'm doing. Is I'm trying the same way
Mama.
I do it. Oh, Mama's home.
Oh, look at that.
The same way I do Blue Stamp is the same way I'm dealing with my kids. Is
first
you make it exciting for them. Figure out where they
that's
are.
Tough, yeah.
How can you make it exciting for them?
Yeah.
And then build from there. And it doesn't matter if they're building boards for me or they're sorting parts for me or they're playing with the Flappy Bird game. Like, it doesn't matter. As long as they're involved and they are growing that involvement, you're winning.
Yep. Yeah, I think that's right. And I just think about, like, accessibility. Like, I don't know. Like, I feel like I would probably lean in a little too hard on some of the some of the stuff, be like, isn't this so cool? And then that makes it not cool, you know?
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
And Chris, I got to tell you, you personally are very vulnerable to that happening with your children.
Yeah.
You are overly dad excited about many things.
Yeah.
And you might run that risk for sure.
Yep.
I feel like I might be a little more aloof. Be like, yeah, it's cool, but you know what?
Yeah, yeah. I guess I know how to control electricity, but no big deal.
I mean, I can show you all kinds of cool waveforms on the scope.
Yeah, yeah. If I can make an LED blink.
Yeah, right? Yeah. You want me to change the color?
Yeah, right, exactly, yeah. I think that actually is the right, I mean, for really any beginner, the right way to entice people is LEDs.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Sure, and usually it's blue. Why is it that the blue LEDs are so much more enticing than all the other ones?
I think the NeoPixel style, like
right. But if there's one color, your daughter today was looking at the
washing machine or dishwasher.
Dishwasher, and it's blue. And I'm convinced if it were red, it wouldn't be nearly as interesting.
Really? The blue is very noticeable. It definitely hits our.
That's true.
It hits
your eye different.
Yeah.
That's true. That can be it. By that measure, green is also very interesting, and green hits your eye differently too. So
yeah.
Maybe that's it. Humans are just built to pick up green and red, or green and blue. Yeah. Who knows?
Yep.
But blue LEDs is how you sell electronics.
No, I think that's how you blind people.
Both?
It is both, yeah. Yeah. You ruin their night by blowing out their cones or their whatever it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know, because I feel like just... I think about how she's going to grow up with just screens everywhere, and I am addicted to screens.
Oh, absolutely.
She's going to be addicted to screens, but how do I make it so that she's interested in what's happening behind the screen, you know?
Well, so that's the... And for
and
me,
not as a content creator as well, by the way.
Right. Well, that's what we talk about all the time. You and I have talked about is the difference between using a device to consume and using a device to create.
Yeah, that's right.
And so using a tablet's no problem if you're creating and you're doing something. The tablet is your tool.
That's right.
And it's not your distraction.
Right. And I don't care if, you know, her or future kids care about. Like, I don't care if they do electronics, but I do care if they're creators versus producers. Not creators like content creators, but like just people doing...
Bringing something new into the world,
right? Mm-hmm. Don't just sit there.
And I think as long as we're chasing after that, ministering to that, then you're raising your kid in a way that is conducive to the human experience.
Right.
So
yeah, I think that's right, yeah.
You know, people innately would like to create, and so showing them the path to get that dopamine hit when it
I don't know if I
hits.
Agree with that.
Really?
You think innately they like to. I think innately we are bags of salt who will sit there watching the tube all day if given the choice.
Yeah, I don't know. If that were true, though, would we have ever broken out of our early civilization days?
Well, there's other motivating factors.
That's true.
That really drove a lot of that stuff.
Yeah, right.
Money, power, sex, the usuals.
Yeah. Yeah, those are also innate. But I think creation's in there. I'm not going to say it's more powerful than money, power, and sex, but I think it's on the list. To create something new that wasn't existing before, I think is in there.
It might be part of it. Hi. Sure.
We're having a little bit of swap out here.
Yeah, we're having fish while we record. Yeah, here we go. Thank you. Doesn't get more real than that.
Youngest amp hour guest yet.
That's true.
She did. Yep.
You mean my wife?
Both.
Yeah. Two of the youngest and most beautiful guests
indeed.
Ever to be on the show.
Ever to be on the show.
Yeah.
Ever.
And brilliant. Brilliant.
Send this to her.
Yeah.
Just a quit, though.
Yeah, you're right. it's interesting what, just thinking about that stuff. I haven't thought about it too much, honestly, because my daughter's not.
Yeah, she's not ready yet.
School age yet. So.
Yeah.
And I think even in school age, she probably won't get exposed to stuff. Like, there's like a lot of early programs, but they're like, kind of more targeted to your kids' age.
Yeah, and even in my kids' age, I haven't found... They have them, and they're great. Yeah.
We were talking about, like, the Mark Rober box and
they have the a ton of cool stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I was growing up, it was fun to have activities and toys and things that were building-related.
Mm-hmm.
The thing about the...
I had all that stuff, but that didn't do it for me. Like, it was Lego.
Right?
Legos, I'd say.
Legos, absolutely.
Yeah. Legos are a common thread, I feel like, throughout the...
Yeah, the other thing that did it for me, and it was a big deal in the early 90s to have a computer.
True, yep.
And so I had a computer in my house and at my school.
Yep.
And so being able to do... Really, that was the trick. That was the magic, was being in school with the computer and, like, learning from a teacher who knew what was up and then being able to apply it at home at my own pace and my own interest. I think that's probably the magic, is you get the basis from someone who knows what's up, and then you let your own direction
context
form.
And yeah, that's a good point.
And then you really solidify both the love and the ability.
I remember one of my good friends growing up, his grandfather was an inventor.
Yeah.
That's not a particularly good one, but he had a workshop that we were allowed to play in.
Yes.
And that was the jam. That was like we made some of the stupidest things ever.
Sure.
But that was like the desire was there, you know?
Yeah. And I think a lot of it is about the autonomy and the, like, you are given the opportunity to make what you want. I'm sure he didn't walk in and be like, hey, here's your kit.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. There is that too, right? Yeah, a lot of this stuff is kind of prefab, like, oh, I follow the directions, whatever. When you make that switch over from, like, not saying that I did. I don't think I'm a good example in any of this space, but like, but that is an important thing to be like, you don't always have to follow the directions. You can go use what you've learned and figure it out, you know, like, it's like,
or come up with your own ideas.
Come up with your own ideas, but then you have to almost just be like, that's harder, but might be more rewarding.
Yeah, and it's worth going to do the work.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, that's mad. And that's the thing with all the kits, which are spectacular. Like, I like the kits.
Yeah.
Thimble, are they still going?
Oscar's
thing. Yeah. He did. I thought he did a great job. His kits were great, and I bought some for my cousin.
Think he's going still, but and David too. Is that right, David?
I never met the other fella. Yeah. But the thing I got those for some of my cousins and when they were appropriate age.
Yeah.
And they were great. The problem is with those is you have to involve the student in the picking of the project.
Yeah.
So I got them, and that was my experience, was I got them a kit that I thought they would like, and it was a risk, and the thing is they don't own it.
Yeah, right.
Right?
Right.
They're doing it because I said it would be cool and fun. It's like, I don't know if it'd be cool and fun. I haven't done it.
Right.
They haven't done it. And so in order to make
shopping experience matters.
In order to make that leap, so like I'm gonna put the time in to see if it's fun, it's gotta be your thing.
Yeah, that's true.
It's gotta be your jam. So if I were to do those kits with my kids, I'd sit them down and I would be like, hey, which one's cool?
Yeah.
Right? Like, which one do you want to do?
A little market research. Yeah, I think about this, you know, we were talking a little bit about, like, you know, kind of persistence. We were talking about music training.
Yeah.
But, like, persistence in that way, too. And, like, I think that kind of tracks in this space as well. Like, things are going to go wrong. In Blue Stamp, music training.
And that's good.
In learning electronics. It is good, but it's about how you respond to it and, like, how you know, it's not like you have to keep going. But it's like trying to get that switch over to you want to keep going. Wouldn't it be cool if we kept going and do this, right?
Yeah, I love that phrase. Wouldn't it be cool if?
Yeah. And one of the things I mentioned is like I think the best possible scenario you can get is if you have a friend who you get to push each other with, right?
Yeah.
If you can find a friend who's like pushing you and being like,
right.
Like, wouldn't it be cool if we tried this other thing and let's keep playing? Like, how do we keep playing? How do we keep the game going? You know,
like how and a little bit of competition. Like,
little
competition.
It's tough.
I remember that.
Right.
Yeah. I bought an RC car, like a build RC car.
Yeah.
It was like a big, it was all my money.
Yeah.
Like, all my money, which was a big deal.
Yep.
And I bought it, and it took a long time to build, a lot of intricate parts and stuff. But at the
Have a buddy doing it at the same
and
time?
And I had a friend that would do it. I'd call him, be like, how far you get with stepping on?
Oh, man, that's killer. See, now you think about origin story, that might have been it
That could have been it. And that was just an RC car. Like, there's nothing hard about that. The little receiver is this little servo that goes on.
But you got it working?
Got it working. And it was fat. Like, it was the ones they, like, compete with. It's like a grown-up hobby car.
Okay.
So you run it on the street and you're like, man, that is fast. That is awesome.
That is gonna ruin someone's toe.
or worse, ruin the car.
Yeah.
But the cool thing was I ruined it many times and I would just
figure out how to fix it.
I would just figure out how to fix it because I knew where to get the parts.
Yep. Fixing is another thing that's important. You know, again, you know, I'm
improving.
630-ish shows in. Someone else would fix their car. 630 shows in. I've asked a lot of people how they got into electronics or engineering, whatever, and Legos is always in the story.
Sure.
Not always. It's often in the story. Fixing.
Yeah.
Like some kind of fixed culture, which you and I both had in our first co-op as well. I think some kind of mentor figure. You know, just think about if we were trying to replicate this, if we were trying to make it formulaic, not saying it's the right call. If we're trying to make it formulaic, what does that look like?
Right. Yeah. That is a good question. I think anything. And the fourth piece of that, which is more of a wild card, not as a thing you need, is the opportunity. Is everybody in their whole lives have a phase of life that they're in or a mood that they're in or whatever, and you have to capture it at the right moment. Yeah. They got to have the time. They got to have the inclination.
Privilege in there too, right? I mean, like,
for sure.
Right, we were
and really
good educational spaces.
Yeah,
we had the resources, all that.
And
stuff,
with the privilege comes I think what the privilege comes down to is the number of opportunities you get where you're in a place where you can grow.
Right.
And so...
Yeah, I'd say college is about 4 years of opportunity.
Yeah, exactly. And many different chances.
Yeah. And like, I messed up a bunch of them.
Good.
Let's say 5 years of college for me.
Yeah, right. Well, the co-op. You get the count.
Yeah,
the
co-op. I know.
Co-op counts.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's the edge question, right? Yeah, how do we make ourselves and our society better by teaching? And these are all great places. And it really is all about just trying. Just really make a good effort, and it'll work out. Okay.
Maybe.
And if it doesn't, then try again.
Yeah. Yeah. We hit an hour. I'm surprised it's been an hour. This is the fast hour.
We did it.
Yeah. I kind of popped this on Dave when he showed up on Friday.
Yeah.
Or just before. Yeah. I was like, hey, we're going
to
record an amp hour.
It's best to not think about it.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
to just dive in.
Yeah.
It's one of those things like cliff diving when you go into the pool.
Oh, yeah. Don't look down.
Yeah. You don't think about it. You just run off the
ledge.
Yeah,
right.
Makes it more entertaining.
I actually don't run off the edge. Personally, I'm not a cliff diver myself.
No, but you did here. Here we are. You put it together and made it go.
Oh, no, I have jumped off a cliff many times for the amp hour. Don't worry about that.
Yeah, I know.
All right, well, thanks for being here, Dave.
It really is my pleasure. And I got it for other guests. When you're here in person with Chris, it's way more fun and it's easier. But you have to really be careful because he keeps trying to tell you to do different things. And like, do this with the mic, do that with the mic, and you actually have to do it.
Oh, yeah.
As opposed to when I'm at
home. Yeah, like when you're 1,000 miles away, I can just
I can do whatever I want.
Tell you all
I can
day
keep hitting the desk. I can do whatever I want. There's nothing you can say because we're on air.
Yeah.
But now, you can just look at me with this finger.
Yeah. Don't do that.
Don't do that. All right, man.
Thanks for being here.
My pleasure.
See ya.